Welcome to Behind the Smiles with your host, the Queen of Yappy herself, Dr. Gina Dorfman. This is a podcast where we interview some of the biggest leaders in dentistry, learn their stories, and share their motivation. Brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. Book a demo today at yappyapp.com.
And welcome back to another episode of Behind the Smiles. I'm your host, Dr. Gina Dorfman, and I am here today with a good friend, Dr. Ashley Hovis. Ashley, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hi, Gina. Good morning. I am doing fabulous. I mean, I'm at home. The weather outside is beautiful, so can't complain. And thank you for having me. Did I say that already?
I don't remember, but you can say it twice. It's okay. And you look fabulous, by the way. You look amazing.
Thank you.
All the rest does well for you. And this episode is like a long time in the making, right? I mean, it took a pandemic for us to get together.
It did. It totally did. I had to reschedule multiple times because of patients, emergency patients. So I believe this is the fourth time it got put on the book.
But it's happening now. So I have a lot of questions for you. But before we get started, give me a little bit, because you have an interesting story about getting into dentistry and then building your practice. And I think you've shared that story in other podcasts. So just give us a very quick kind of rundown of how you ended up in dentistry and how you created Smiling Company.
So I always tell people that I was actually brainwashed into going into dentistry. My mom is a dentist. I'm half joking, but half not. I remember just growing up in the dental office. My mom was a dentist in the Philippines, and she moved here a year after she graduated from dental school because she was petitioned by my aunt who lived in Ohio. She was petitioned by my aunt to move to America, and for an immigrant from the Philippines, that is huge. That is like striking gold. So my mom, after she graduated, she moved to Ohio without any family besides my aunt, and she had me there. And I remember, so my mom, because it's very hard for an immigrant to get their license in the States. They have to go through multiple hoops, and it's a lot of money. And she was essentially a single parent raising me. So in a nutshell, she didn't become a dentist here in the States, but she worked as a dental office manager, as an ortho assistant, as an RDA, just lots of different roles in the dental office. And I remember, because she was essentially a single parent, childcare was tough. So she would bring me to work when she couldn't find someone to watch me. So a lot of my childhood memories are actually from the dental office. And I remember just growing up and her always saying, you should become a dentist. One, because I couldn't become one here. But two, you'll be able to serve. But at the same time, you'll be able to serve in the health profession, in the health space. But it's also not as long and arduous a journey as medical school. And because you're a female, you'll be able to balance work life with home life. And I just remember her always ingraining that in me. And sure enough, the brainwashing stuck, and I became a dentist.
This is really funny. I suppose that in Filipino families, or just like in Russian Jewish families, a fetus isn't really considered viable until he graduates medical or dental school, or in the very least a law school. So you graduated school, and then I understand you worked for a little bit. How did you start your practice?
I started my practice. So I graduated from NYU in 2009, and I married my college sweetheart, who at the time was in, he was just finishing medical school. So after after NYU, I basically followed him around wherever he got into residency and then fellowship. So I worked as an associate in many offices on the East Coast and on the West Coast. And I was just done with being an associate. I think it's because I didn't have an amazing office like yours, Dr. Gina, to be a part of. But a lot of my practices were either dying solo practitioners or they were mills. And I thought that I could do better, honestly. So it was my goal after we had finally decided where to plant roots, which was outside of Sacramento, close to our parents, which that may or may not have been a mistake. The jury's still out. After we decided to plant roots, I was all in for doing a startup, and I found a location, and I finally announced it on Facebook Live one day, and this was back in 2017 after I was actually fired from my associateship. And that same day that I got fired, I felt like humiliated, which is where that video came from, I think, all of the emotion. But I drove to the office. I had bought this building. We had just closed on this building for like a week. And I was going to keep it on wraps and work as an associate until I could build enough patient flow. That was my plan. That was my ultimate plan. But plans changed. And I did a Facebook Live, and basically it was just me and my iPhone in my car. And I had announced to all of my friends and family on Facebook that I was finally opening my own practice. And this was, 8 years after I had graduated from dental school. And that, because it was such a raw video, it's interesting because I still to this day can't rewatch that video. It brings up a lot of emotions in me. And I get emotional just thinking about it, like that place where I was at, like feeling sorry for myself and just thinking that this wasn't, like, how did it take me this long to build the office of my dreams? And just like feeling sorry for myself for all of the reasons that I told myself why I couldn't do a startup in California. And all of that emotion came out on that video, which was live. It was my first ever Facebook Live video. And live is live. Like, as soon as the tears started coming, I couldn't stop it anymore. And so I think that really resonated with people, because a lot of people make excuses for not doing what they want to do. And there's a lot of fear involved. And that video got shared and reshared and reshared. And I think it's 12,000 views to this date. And that's what had garnered the attention of Dr. Howard Ferran, and he interviewed me on his podcast. But it also was the genesis of this whole startup community. So after that video went out, Michael Arias, the dental marketer, he contacted me. And at the time, I'm sorry, Michael, if you listen to this, at the time he was like, "Hey, I'm the dental marketer." I had no idea who Michael Arias was. I thought he was maybe like, he wrote a magazine. I had no idea. Anyways, he had said, "Hey, I saw your Facebook Live video, and I think we should do something with it. If it's okay with you, maybe we should create a documentation of this process, because it's a big deal. It's a big deal graduating with the amount of student debt that we have. It's a big deal starting from scratch and in a very saturated market." And he's like, "I think your story may be able to help other doctors who could potentially be in the same place as you." And I said, "You know what? Like, let's do it. If it helps anyone else, let's document." And that's what we did. So we've been documenting my story, the making of Smiling Co., since 2017. And then I started a Facebook group, which we have 8,000 members in that community. And it's just been it's just crazy to think where I was in April of 2017, feeling like completely down. I had just been fired. I won't go into detail. If you want to hear the details, you should listen to the podcast. But it's just been a very crazy story of how just being real and authentic and being able to share the highs and lows of what it takes to open a startup.
You know, I love your story for a couple of reasons. First of all, I love this sort of story of turning your pain into power. And you're right. You know, that of course, I watched the video too. And I it wasn't until I actually heard you on the Dental Marketer podcast that I became curious about your story. But it was raw, it was emotional, it was, you know, your pain was coming through, and yet you, and a lot of times, that's what it takes for us to grow and become better and build something amazing. And I think actually, and I wrote an article yesterday about sort of relaunching our practices, and one of the things that it, you know, I realized as I was writing this is that for many of us, it will create an opportunity to sort of, you know, streamline our practices and make them better and make, you know, get rid of some you know, old luggage that we've been carrying around. And of course, you have this beautiful startup that was sort of born out of that pain. But I also, the other part of this, and again, this is a reminder, you know, we talk a lot about leadership, and this is the topic that I love the most, and there's a lot of that in the article that I wrote. And the name of the article is, and I'll share it shortly, is Lead with a Plan, Not Panic. But it's funny because you said you have plans, and the one thing about plans is that the only thing you can count on with plans is that plans will never work out. So you have to be flexible and you have to be willing to pivot, which is kind of what you ended up doing in your situation. But I think what I also love about that story is how you harness the power of social media to turn essentially a block of cement into a thriving, a viable, beautiful practice filled with smiling faces and you know, patients and team, and shared your story and empowered so many others who followed after you. And that's the beauty of social media when utilized correctly. And I think this is really what I want to talk about today, because again, going forward, as we relaunch our practices, using social media is a very cost-effective and a very powerful way to spread the word about our practices in the community. And I see that a lot of my colleagues are doing social media all wrong, because the reason why your video got traction is because it was real, it was raw, it was emotional. And a lot of times the way that we, the rest of our community, that social media is, we have those sterile images that are generic, that don't generate any patient engagement. You can join a mastermind and you know, for whatever dollars a month, you get access to some social media images, and that doesn't seem to get the engagement that you received. So if someone wanted to use social media, what are some of the advices that, like, how would one get started? What would you recommend?
How did I get started? Let's see. I think that...
Well, you broke down on life. That's how you got started. Out of anything else that we can do, let's talk about that. Other ways.
I think the way to get started is to really hone in on who you are talking to. I think that when you try to address everybody, you address no one. And for me, the person who I was really targeting was my ideal patient. And my ideal patient, she drives this kind of car, she shops here, she shops there, she's a mom, she has, she likes to eat out, she likes to be social with friends, she likes the nicer things in life, she goes to yoga studios, and she isn't afraid to splurge on Veneers or Tiffany & Co., which is where my color scheme came from. Everything that I have done for my office was thought out far in advance. Like I had thought about the way I wanted to practice long before I had even really known where it was going to be, who I was going to target. Like this was my dream practice. So I just had a lot of time to think of, if I were this patient, what would I want to see? And for me, the type of clientele that I wanted to attract was someone similar to me, frankly, someone who I could grab a glass of wine with and talk about life. And I think the biggest part of your branding has to be authentic, but it has to be authentic to you. Because if I told, you know, someone like a male to talk about like his experiences with X, Y, and Z, it would be in a completely different point of view. So I think where to get started is really, who are you talking to? What kind of patient are you trying to attract to your practice? And then be real about it. And in my office, we actually talk about food most of the time. We talk about where we like to hang out on the weekends. And my entire culture is built around that. And that's why if you look at my social media, if you look at Smile & Company, I've never been shy to talk about the hard things, about, you know, being a business owner, being a mom. And I don't think anything is off the table, which I believe patients appreciate. Like I think the days of just wearing a white coat and hanging your accolades on the wall are gone. I think patients are now more than ever are going to really feel that personalized attention, especially in this day and age where our PPE is freaking scary. Like, I don't know about you, but wearing that mask and wearing that shield and wearing the hair bouffant, did I say that right? Or the gown, it just makes it even more of an intimidating place to be. So if you can connect with patients, if you can talk about the just more personalized stuff, not just about teeth. If you look at my feed, I barely have any teeth on my marketing. And it's because my entire thing, I haven't actually been marketing. I've been branding, and branding myself as a dentist who is scared of the dentist, but wants to connect with you on a more personalized level.
I love that. I mean, first of all, we all know that people like doing business with those that they like and trust. And we like and trust people that are a lot like us and people that we feel that we know something about. I've heard, I think it was Scott Luna that I heard him talking about it at the townie meeting years ago, where he had that technique where he would walk into a room. And of course, you know, his practice model is kind of a large, high volume PPO type of a practice, right? Not necessarily large, but definitely high volume PPO model. So there's not really a lot of time for personal bonding. But the way he would start a conversation is he would try to find three common points with a patient. Like, oh, where are you from? Oh, my sister lives there. Or, do you have kids? Oh, yeah, my kids go to this elementary or whatever. And from there, all of a sudden, he humanized himself. And I think this is, you know, when you're posting pictures of yourself wearing like a cute apron and baking cupcakes with your kids, I think you're not that cold, sterile, faceless, scary dentist. You're just like them. You're a Lululemon wearing mom with nails that are matching your color scheme, your Tiffany and Co. scheme. You really do put a lot of thought into everything, which I absolutely love. But they feel like they know you, and if they know you and they like you, they can trust you. And here's another thing. We were talking about just now, you sort of very gently brushed on this like online reviews or reputation thing. And of course, that's very critical, very important, because it doesn't matter. You said, I didn't do marketing, I did do branding. But most of us still market, and the way we advertise, right? So we send out postcards, or, you know, maybe we have Google AdWords, or maybe we have Facebook campaigns. But once we capture someone's attention, the very first thing this person is going to do is they're going to check their online reviews. And everyone is like, this is this big thing. Everyone thinks Yelp is a bully. Everyone is scared of online getting bad online reviews. We're using review generation software to get more reviews. But here's the thing. People will leave reviews for those they like. And people are a lot less likely to leave a bad review for someone that they feel is a human. Because they review, when they go and they rent and they, you know, they post negative things, they're reviewing a business. They're not reviewing a mom who you know, works all day treating them, helping them, and then she goes home baking cupcakes with their kids. That doesn't mean that there's not a raving lunatic who's going to leave a bad review, but it, you know, you're sort of stacking cards in your favor when you are a human, when you're real and authentic, rather than a faceless business. And I absolutely love about that. And I also love what you said about, you know, branding, sort of putting everything you thought through every step, and you spoke to, in outside of dentistry, we call that a customer persona. For example, at Yappy, we have a customer persona who might be like you, who might, you know, who is a tech-savvy young dentist who is building a practice that speaks to their patients, who's interested in efficiency and keeping things clean. And so that's one persona. And then we might have another customer persona, who's maybe, you know, a dentist who is buying an existing practice and they want to modernize things. And that might not be the same person, and the marketing might not be the same. And so when we're just carpet bombing patients with postcards that are speaking to some generic mom, who's, you know, we know in dentistry we have to, you know, we get the mom and the mom brings the family. So we're, you know, we're speaking to this generic mom, and it could be a soccer mom driving a minivan, or it could be someone like me, right? And these people have different interests. So you're hitting that right on the head. Let me ask you a question. Did you do research, like, did, or is that something that came naturally to you? Did you get some really good advice? Because this is like, this is not even marketing 101. This is some advanced advice. How did you sort of hone your ideas about marketing and social media?
I have listened to a lot of podcasts, not necessarily dental related. I am intrigued just at marketing in general. But I am also, if you look at my DISC personality profile, I am an I. I'm a high I, which means I thrive off of social interactions. And this is how I've always been. Like, I got into dentistry, besides the brainwashing, because of people. And that is, like, if you took, I always think about, like, okay, well, I just want to do new patients all day. I want to talk to people all day long, which is very opposite of, I feel, your typical dentist who would rather be in someone's mouth all day and not have to talk to people. I think that all of the people who I buy from, like you said, all of the companies, that I frequent, all of the restaurants that I frequent, I know the owners. I go and I sit down with my favorite server, and that's just me. So I think it's a combination of just my love for people and my love for relationships. And also, yeah, I don't know much about, I don't know. Like, I always thought that, I think my whole thing was going back to the beginning. When I started this process, it didn't start out with me trying to get patients. I think when I started this whole journey, it was literally telling people about who I was and what I was going to do differently in the dental space. And I think that may have been the most important thing that I've done, quite honestly.
I definitely think that it resonated with people because see, no one wants to be sold. And we know, we immediately know when we're sold, and we immediately have a negative reaction. And that's very different from when we are telling a story. In fact, some of the best marketing books are about telling your story, right? So I love what you've done there. You've not only created the brand around the marketing persona that you were trying to attract, but you also did it by way of telling a story about your practice, and you also let the patients know that you are very relatable, because just like many of them, you are, you know, you're afraid of going to the dentist, and it's sort of like when you tell people, look, I feel your pain, and I'm going to make sure that, quite literally, that you're in good hands and that you have a better experience than what I had or what I had perceived I had, they respond very, very differently to you. And I think that shows. And I love that you've built. So it's funny when you said about being a social person, because I'm exactly the same way. And like this inability to get out and socialize with people is absolutely killing me. When I'm in a room with, like, at the Voices of Dentistry, I literally hugged everyone in that room. I remember the first day just coming in and giving everyone a hug. And at the end of the day, I'm like, I'm exhausted because I've hugged everyone in that room. And I went to a restaurant yesterday that we frequent, but of course I had a mask on. But I walked in, and the restaurant manager is waving at me because he recognized me even with my mask on, just because I'm never there just to eat. We always talk to the staff there. We always say hi. We've had our Christmas party there years ago. And so creating relationships with people is very important in practice building. And I know sometimes for those of us who are introverts, I think that's a little bit more difficult. But I think it can be done. And I think it can be done by hiring team members that are complementary. You hired your team. Now, here's what I hear all the time, because I talk about team training and hiring and firing and culture and all of that kind of stuff. And I always keep on hearing the same thing. It's hard to find good people. And I agree with that. But it's even harder if no one wants to work in your office. So obviously you created the culture that people wanted to join. But you didn't place ads on Craigslist, did you? You found your team differently. Tell me about that.
So interestingly enough, Gina, my first applicant ever is Judy, and she's still with me to this day. She's my office manager. She actually found me on Facebook, and she had been following my story since day one. And as soon as I had announced, hey, I'm now taking resumes, so if you are interested in being a part of this, just submit it. And she did. So, and she's still with me, and I couldn't have built this office without her, Judy. So if you're listening to this, I hope you know how much I appreciate you and I'm grateful for you. Having a very social practice, having a very fun practice has also led to the demise of a lot of the people who have been in my practice, because I used to think, like I say this all the time, I used to think that when I was going to open my own practice, I was going to hire people who were going to be lifers and just retire with me. Like I had heard stories about the difficulties with HR, but I had always thought, well, those are for the bosses who just don't know how to treat their employees and all this stuff. I was like, that's not going to apply to me. Surely I was mistaken, because most of the sleepless nights that I've encountered since opening this office has been with HR, has been with me not being able to step up as a leader, me still really tiptoeing around what I would have said, because I didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. I wanted to be the fun boss. I wanted to be the lovable boss. Like, let's just have a good time, like how everybody sees it on social media. And that's why I'm so grateful to leaders like you, especially women leaders in dentistry, who can effectively but compassionately run very large scale, successful companies and practices. So you're my hero. You're my shiro, Dr. Gina.
Well, thank you. You're so sweet. But you know, I got to tell you what I heard right there. That's the very best example of extreme ownership, Because a lot, and I absolutely love this book. I think this is one of the books. I just, Brit actually just released an article with my favorite books and my top six, I believe. And Extreme Ownership was right there at number three. I always say if your team constantly disappoints you, it's on you, doctor. And, you know, every success is owned by your team and every mistake is owned by the leader. And I keep hearing, look, it's hard to find good people. They make mistakes. No one cares. They don't treat my practice like they own it. Like, why should they? Why are we expecting people to be owners when they're not, right? Or to act like owners when they don't have a stake. And what I heard you say is, I wasn't an effective leader. I had to learn. I had to become better. And I think that this is just like, building a muscle, you know, like Mark Costas didn't get like that overnight, right? Like it took some hard work to get where he is, both as a leader and, you know, physically. It's just like flexing a muscle. It's just like learning to do endo. It's just like any other skill that we need to learn and practice and become better at. Any advice to someone who's struggling with their team, especially as they're building a brand new team? Because I think that's the hard part. Like when you just first start, it's hard to understand. Like you have people reaching out to you who want to work in your practice. You attract a lot of other people's rejects, I guess, right? Your budget may not be the same. I see a lot of doctors because we're rarely overstaffed. Very rarely, especially in a startup, but even in mature practices. So it's hard to let go of Karen, even though Karen isn't working out, but you think as long as she has pulse, it's better than no Karen. So what's your advice? How do we improve and how do we deal with those difficulties?
I think setting clear expectations for one, having them not just expressed verbally, but written down. That's been one of my biggest learning experiences because I haven't always explicitly said, this is what I expect from you. And then give them guidelines. Like this is what I want an A player to be. This is what I want a B player to be. And also, I think that a lot of our employees may not even know what our vision for our practices is. And I find that I'm constantly telling my team just what it is that we do here. Like, why is it we spend so much time away from our families, be stuck in this 1900 square feet? Like, what is it for? And at the end of the day, it's about reiterating your vision and just a lot of gratitude. I tell my team all the time that I'm just so appreciative of the work that they do for me day in, day out. And one thing that we've also been doing, well, we did do before our office shut down, was we had weekly team meetings. And my team is now 10 amazing ladies. And if you count up, I mean, that's a lot of money when you're thinking about there's no production during that hour and a half, and I'm paying everybody their wage as a hygienist. And then we game plan for the week ahead, the things that we dropped the ball, the things that we could do better, and then we highlight the things that went really well. And I think just having very open lines of communication has been the biggest thing that I could have done as a leader.
You said so many wonderful things there. First of all, I'm looking at the pictures of your office right now, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And you said stuck in those 1900 square feet, and I'm thinking that's not bad. That's not bad at all to be stuck in those 1900 square feet, because I've seen a lot worse. But seriously, you've built an amazing office, and it grew so fast. I'm blown away with 10 team members because it feels like it was just yesterday. I'm sure it wasn't. And, you know, in business, an overnight success takes about at least 5 years, right? So I know there was a lot of hard work and it wasn't all overnight, but you said a lot of important things. Clear expectations are a must. I don't think that, I think a lot of times we assume that we've communicated clearly. Who said that? Was it George Bernard Shaw who said that the worst or the most difficult part about communication is the impression that it took place? I butchered that comment, but that's the idea that it's, you know, we assume that we've communicated clearly. And then when our expectations are not met, we a lot of times jump to the conclusion that the person is stupid or lazy or, you know, distracted or whatever. And the thing is, when we assume that people are there to do their absolute best, and I strongly believe that most people, I mean, there are always exceptions, right? But I think most people wake up in the morning with an intention to be good, to have a great day, to contribute, to thrive from knowing that they've done the best that they can, and they want their praise. You mentioned that you express gratitude every single day. And again, one of the other things that we assume is that, our team members understand when they do a good work and they don't. So they don't understand the expectations. We assume that they understand. We assume that when they don't do what we want them to do, they are not doing a good job. There are a lot of assumptions, and when we make assumptions, as my husband likes to say, we make an ass out of you and me, right? So absolutely, clear communication. Sometimes asking them, okay, what did you, I just communicated this to you, what did you understand? And I know personally, I'm not always clear. I can say 100 words a minute, and I think that everybody understood what I said, and people are just like, what? What did just happen there? And the problem with not giving, interestingly enough, most employees, when you look at employee surveys, most employees will say that the reason why they left job, or the reason why they didn't step up, or they didn't perform to whatever expectation, is not because they didn't understand it, because they don't know that they didn't understand something. They will say that it's because they don't feel appreciated. And we go, why don't they feel appreciated? We pay them a lot of money. We give them the bonuses. We give them, they have everything. Look at this place that, but we didn't express it. They didn't hear it. And that's a big problem. And so when you are conscious about giving praise to your employees, and you've actually even done this on this podcast a couple of times, you mentioned Judy and how much, what she meant to your practice. When that becomes a daily practice, your daily routine, then your team's attitude changes completely. And then you don't have to worry about giving feedback. Because see, we shy away from feedback, in my opinion, because when we start giving what we think is feedback is taken as criticism. Because there was no gratitude before. Because we never pointed out what they're doing right. And when we just go straight into what's wrong, or even worse, try to sandwich it in a compliment, which is like everyone knows what's coming. Like when you say, I think you're doing a great job, but like that's not either you're negating one or the other, or the person is going, okay, this I know what's coming. Now I'm gonna be criticized, right? And weekly team meetings, we don't have enough meetings. We don't, I know it's an investment of time. I know we're always busy. I know things are not getting done. But when we're not communicating, we're essentially killing our own businesses because no one knows what's going on. No one knows what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, what the expectations are, what the wins are, right? So again, you've nailed it. Everything, like you need to speak about that kind of stuff. Seriously, you need to parlay this into the lecture because you built an incredible practice. And how long has it been? Because it feels like a pretty short amount of time.
A little over 2.5 years.
Well, that's very impressive. In a very competitive market, I would say. Now, I'm not familiar with, it's in Folsom, right? It's just outside of Sacramento?
Just outside Sacramento. I have, there are, for a town of 70,000, there are 104 dentists. Right. So my population is 1 to 660. So hence the reason why everyone thought I was a little crazy wanting to do a startup here. But
yeah, I mean, any accountant, any dental accountant, especially worth his salt, would tell you that you would have been crazy to open this. And here's another point. This is something that comes up all the time. We hear dentists, this goes back to that extreme ownership. We hear dentists talk about the economy. We hear dentists talk about the, HMOs and DSOs and you know, the big TVs that we're competing with. And here's the thing, we're not spending enough time focused on what happens within our four walls. We're so worried about everything that's happening outside. And yet, you can have four practices on the same, like in California, it's totally normal. You have an intersection, there are gonna be four practices on in that intersection, at least, right? And then one of them is going to be crushing it, and then the other three will be complaining about the economy, and it's probably because of something that dentist is doing. And I think that's going to become really, really relevant now as we are starting to resuscitate our economy and come back online with our offices, because some of us are going to talk about how the pandemic killed their practice, and others are going to be proactive and. I don't mean to sound critical about this. It's more of a call to action to anyone who's listening. I hope that we focus on what happens in the practice as we restart. What are you doing? Any words of advice?
I would say if you're in a startup or if you're planning a startup now, like if you're in the group, well, thank you for being in the Facebook group. But two, I think this. There were so many posts of my peers who were just starting out, like just feeling defeated for opening a practice in the middle of a global pandemic. And my message to you is, I think that now more than ever, like this, use this time to your advantage. Use this time to really think about your branding, think about all of the details and have them written down for your future team members. And also, like you said, Gina, I don't believe that, I don't think it's necessarily negative. I think it's reality that a lot of these older practices are not going to survive. And a lot of the older dentists who maybe were teetering on retirement, I think this is going to push them over the edge. So I think that we are in a very advantageous time to do a startup, to start marketing about your level of sterilization, your technology, how you are going above and beyond all of the OSHA guidelines. Like this, you could be documenting so much right now, even while your doors are not open.
Well, absolutely. I think this creates a huge opportunity for the practices that technologically advanced that can show, okay, we have contactless forms, you know, look, you know, we don't give you a clipboard, and then because paper carries germs, right? You can talk about your technology, about being paperless, about you know, you can show off your sterilization technique, you can show off all of the protections, maybe you've installed some sneeze guards, maybe you've installed some high velocity suctions. I'm actually not advocating for investing a lot of money into technology that may or may not be necessary, so don't go crazy spending things, but something like MacGyvering, even like an inexpensive funnel next to your chair, doing something like that might be better and something that's worth talking about. And definitely utilize social media to tell the story about how your practice is going above and beyond and taking care of people. Put that on your website. You have an amazing, gorgeous website. The company, I'll let you plug the company that created your website. I know you're very proud of that.
Yeah, so the amazing Studio 88 did my website. So if you don't already know, smileandcompany.com, check it out and you'll see for yourself the kind of websites they produce. And I think it's gorgeous, so thank you.
I love how they, so one of the videos that I saw at the dinner that they sponsored at the VOD is, it was very emotional. Like we were at dinner and, I didn't even have wine that night. And I was like, you know, like choking, watching the video, marketing video of all things. I'm like, what? Why am I crying? I'm not crying. You were crying. So definitely I love that emotion in marketing, and like just looking at your website, there's a certain feeling. It's like that place that you know, you're going to put your Lululemons on and you're going to go and have a glass of wine. And I don't even like believe in having wine in a dental office, but the way you do it is amazing. So if I'm ever in Folsom, you know, maybe I'll come in for a teeth cleaning. We're coming to the end of this, but I wanted to talk to you a little bit about something that you've mentioned earlier. You said when your mom insisted that you go into dentistry. By the way, when I told my dad that I was going to be a dentist, my dad's reaction was like, that's like being a carpenter. Like, why don't you become a real doctor, like a cardiologist or something? And it's, you know, the irony of it is that my dad fortunately has not needed a cardiologist in his life, but a dentist he utilized plenty. So I'm glad that I chose this as a profession. But this is where I'm coming to my question: life work balance. You said your mom said that this profession will allow you to have some life work balance. And you know, granted, we often complain about how busy we are, and being a mom of three boys. So mom of three boys, a practice owner, a community leader, balancing all those things. I mean, that's never easy. Talk to me about life work balance.
Well, I think I'm actually a really bad example of work-life balance, to put it frankly. And I think that when we think that work-life balance is a thing like that we really, really have to achieve, that becomes a weight on our shoulders. But I think that if you switch your mindset into now thinking that, you know what, it's a moving target. Just while my practice is getting up and running, I have to devote all of that time in its infancy. That's my newborn baby. And then when it stabilizes, I can spend more time at home. Obviously, this pandemic has allowed me a lot more time to be at home with my kids. But I think one of the other things that I really want, especially younger moms to know, is don't feel guilty about wanting to do something for you. Like, I am a better mom when I am out of the house. I'm a better mom when I'm not around my boys 24 hours a day, as these past few weeks have proven. It's really true. And I think that women too, especially, I think there's always going to be some judgment that you're not doing enough at home, or you're not spending enough time at the office. And I think that in a nutshell, we just have to give ourselves grace, a lot more grace and forgiveness for all the things that we are trying to accomplish, because nobody can do it all at the same time. And I have an amazing team at my office who I always say that I hire up so that I don't have to do as much as I can. Like, I really want my team to be empowered to do the things that I don't have to do anymore. And that's another mindset change for me. In the beginning, I wanted to have my hand in every single cookie jar because it was still my baby. And now that I take a step back, and I think that I have the best team because I don't micromanage them. They are at liberty to create as they please. And all similarly in my home, I have a nanny who helps me even when I'm at home, because I am still, just because our doors have closed, I haven't stopped working behind the scenes. I'm still thinking about branding and developing protocols for when we return, and watching webinars around the clock. And I give credit to where credit is due. And I don't do this by myself by any means, at home or at work. And I'm trying to let go of the things that are just out of my control.
You said a lot of great things there. Here's my story. I think it was last year where Mark Costas came up to me and he said, look, I'm organizing this event. I'm working with some wonderful, with Kira Dent, and it was another female dentist who was actually a guest on my show, Summer, Dr. Summer. And I want you to speak at this event, and I want you to speak about life-work balance. And I said, me? You're the one who knows, if anyone knows anything about life-work balance, that's you, Mark. That's not me. Like, look at you and look at me, right? So, but you know, he asked, and I said, okay, fine, I'll do it. I'll speak about work. But since I don't know anything about life-work balance, I decided to do some research. And you know, I went off, like with everything else, if I start to research something, I go off the deep end, and like I get very deep into details. And what I found is that it doesn't exist. But what does exist, unfortunately, is guilt. And I do know, and I don't know if you want to get too personal with this, we can always cut this out, but I do know that someone very close to you tried to make you feel guilty for, you know, for trying to do too much. Do you want to talk about this? Do you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, now I'm probably going to get emotional. So someone very close to me, okay, I'll just say my mom, the same person who told me to get into dentistry for the work-life balance. I got this message from her at the beginning of my workday, and it was just a very long message about how she felt sorry for my kids because they didn't have their mom. And she said, I mean, I don't think she tried to be malicious. I think she said it so that it was like holding up a mirror, because all of the things that I internalize as a mom, I mean, with my CE and just all the time spent at the office, like I already put a lot of pressure on myself. So to hear it coming from someone who's very close to me. And I think that after I had received that, like I was just a mess that day. And I was in between patients, and I was basically wiping off my face and telling all my patients that I suffered from allergies. And as a knee-jerk reaction, I had canceled everything that was going to be coming up within the next few weeks. I invest a lot of time in continuing education. So I was going to be traveling a lot. Mark had asked me to be a panelist at the summit, which I had already told him, like, Mark, I'm so sorry, I have to cancel. But in that moment, when I was just so down about just the pressures of being a mom and being a working mom, I had sent a post to the mommies, the MDIB, the mommies doing business in dentistry. Is that what it is?
I always screw it up. MDIB. Mommy dentist
in business.
Yes.
Is that what
MDIB,
it is?
MDIB, yes. Mommy dentist in business.
So while I was in the bathroom, crying my eyes out, I had screenshotted the text thread with my mom, and I won't advertise this so it doesn't get back to my mom that I'm talking about her. And I had messaged to the group of moms, mommy dentists, and I had said, like, this is where I'm at. I already feel basically like a crappy mom as is for all the things that I'm trying to do at the same time. And the outpouring of just compassion and empathy and support was overwhelming. And I'm getting emotional just thinking about, I think, 500 plus comments later from this community of women. One, I'm getting emotional because not all women tear each other down. But two, we know exactly what we're dealing with. And my message is, my point is, one, don't try to be everything to all people. Like I have years of therapy that I already have to do with my family life. But I think that when you are very clear on on what you're doing and who you're doing it for, that the only people that really should matter are the people within your inner circle. And when you are in a downward spiral, when you are experiencing shame or guilt, reach out to a community of people who will understand and empathize with you, like who will sit there with you in your dark space. And social media has been that for me. That group on Facebook was such an uplifting outlet for me. And people like you and Dr. Aaron Elliott and everyone just started chiming in. Like Aaron actually sent me a video message after that. And whatever you're dealing with, whether you're female or male, whatever struggles you're facing, don't internalize it. Like, talk to someone about it. And I think with, since Josh Austin is a good friend of both of ours, like he gave us a talk about precisely this, how there's just so much mental angst in our space. And because we are embarrassed to show the real us, we internalize that. And that's why it can be a very dark profession, unfortunately. So talk to someone, find support, and realize that you really are going to be making so many mistakes along this process. That is guaranteed. But also just giving yourself more grace.
It's a beautiful message. And again, love everything you said. I love that you said that not all women tear each other down. I think somehow there is a perception that, you know, women are catty and competitive. And that's just not been my experience. I mean, I can't think of a single time where I did not feel supported by my community of amazing women sort of sharing the same thing. And this is one of the reasons, I mean, I know emotion sells, but that's not the reason why I wanted you to talk about this. But the reason I wanted you to talk about this is because, you know, we talked about all the wonderful things that are happening. And I think for anyone listening to this, there could be this perception that, hey, you know, she has it all and she has it all figured out. And I don't, and that goes back exactly to what Josh was talking about when he was talking about Instagram dental porn, where, you know, you're looking at all those beautiful cases. I know you post amazing, beautiful dentistry, but there are failures and mistakes, whether it's practice management or your margins or, you know, broken porcelain. I just had a veneer popping off that I've done not too long ago, that I'm sure, you know, I actually realized that my cement wasn't setting. I ordered new cement, we re-cemented and it's fine. But like that stuff happens all the time. And on top of that, we have this, you know, internal tape that we're playing in our heads that we're not enough, we're not doing enough, we're not good enough. And then to have someone who is so close, who meant well, your mom meant well, she adores you, she's so proud of you, she meant well, and she just didn't realize the impact that her words would make on you, probably because you already had it in your head. Like, she didn't put that message in there. You already somehow felt maybe a little thinly strange, maybe a little bit out of balance, and that message was sort of that last nail. And sharing that with the women who are experiencing the same thing, all of us have someone in our personal lives that is maybe a little more judgmental or not appreciative of what we do, doesn't understand what we go through. And I think the reminder to talk to someone about it, someone who can understand, who'll sit with you in that dark room, as you said, I think that's very important. So thank you for getting emotional and sharing this, because I think that we all need to hear this message that, first of all, we're enough, and we're better moms when we take care of ourselves and do things that we want to do. And it, you know, our kids, like my kids are older, so they can actually verbalize how proud they are of me, especially my 12-year-old daughter. Like hearing that from her, that she's proud of me, that is the biggest compliment that anyone can give me, right? So thank you for sharing this, and thank you for sharing your story and your wisdom about team management and building a practice on social media, which is very powerful and very cost effective when done correctly. You don't need to join a mastermind or platinum membership or any of those things. It's authentic, right?
Right, Right. Authenticity will always win. And speaking of cost, I just wanted to point out that when I started my Facebook page, I was just looking at my ad spend not too long ago. Since I started in April of 2017 to present day, I have spent less than $4,200 total.
Wow. That is incredible. I've spent 10x that amount on postcards that didn't work.
Yeah. So telling your story and showing who you are really does work. And I'm a big fan of you just being you.
Yeah. And it helps if it's you. Oh. It also helps if it's you. No, but I'm kidding. But absolutely. Authenticity is how we show up for people. That earns trust, and trust is what we need to grow our business, our communities, and become better people.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Message. Thank you so much.
Thank you for finally
coming on the show and making this happen. This is if I can manage to not lose this recording.
Oh, please. I think it was a good one.
I think it was. It definitely was. So thank you so much, and take good care. Stay safe.
You too. Thanks, Gina.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Smiles. Today's episode was brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. You can learn more about Yappy by visiting www.yappyapp.com. If you have any suggestions for future guests, or if you have any questions for us, you can reach out to Dr. Gina directly. Send your email to drgina@yappycentral.com. You can also find the email in our show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review on iTunes or on any of the apps that you're listening from. It's greatly appreciated. And as always, thanks for listening and stay tuned for the next episode.